The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the K4 Wings, along with the crew, Case Keeper. He, of course, Las Vegas, not out there in beautiful Las Vegas. Kid Keeper, yes, the same name. It's his old man.
In beautiful Trussville.
In beautiful Trussville, Alabama, executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. And there's Kai Gregory, who's been handicapping for nearly four decades. I'm Tony Curry, been on ESPN Sports Radio for 30 years.
Have those two words ever been together, beautiful and Trussville?
No, and never. I've just invented that. That's the new slogan.
You know, it used to be the Dale women. Now it's the Ville women. Just in case you guys want to know, because we used to do the Gardendale and the Irondale. Now it's the Trussville women. I'm just telling you, if you're looking for good women, look for the Ville at the end. And you're normally going to find something that likes to go to a mobile home park at 3 o'clock in the morning. Just saying. Let's get into some games here. First thing I'm saying right off the bat, do you want some worthless Tony Curry info, or do you want a question?
Absolutely.
Yeah, all that we can get.
Team in the National Football League, by far, it's got the most three and outs this season. Gase, you got?
Most three, the Titans?
No, that would be your Eagles. 29 three and outs, and all you had to do was watch the game last night.
Gee, that's a logical answer. That's that doesn't make
29 three and outs, Jalen Hurts and the Eagles have had this year. And a lot of people are saying, you know, they don't have to have that many. They're just kind of playing along with the game. They're just playing along with the game. It came back to bite them in the ass last night. Of course, they lose to a team that a lot of people did not have money on. We actually kind of like the other side. We'll see what happens with this game because the Eagles got a very interesting game coming this weekend against the Lions where they're actually giving up a point and a half at home. So it'll be interesting. Another late game I thought was really weird. Tell me if I'm wrong here. I was looking at sometimes I'll pull up college football best bets just early in the week to see what other people have, what other people are looking at. And some guy's betting his life that Wisconsin will go over their team total minus -140 in the first half against Indiana, and that over under on the total in the first half is half a point, 0.5. In other words, all Wisconsin's got to do is score 1 point in the first half against Indiana, and you'll win your bet minus -140. Anybody
That's
take
crazy.
And they've been shut out how many times in complete games this year? Three, four?
Yeah.
Let's give Case big credit. Big great call this week. He took Wisconsin over Washington. They won outright.
They sure did. Big win.
In the snow. It's weird. It's not like Washington's a tropical paradise, but they looked like they'd never seen snow before.
Yeah, they're probably freaked out. Yeah, probably a bunch of LA guys.
What was that line? Four? It was kind of a strange line, too. I think it was about 3.5, 4 or something.
No, I think I had I think I wish I bet the money line. I think I had 12.5 or 13.
I knew it was kind of a bizarre line. We got some really great lines we're going to jump into. And I love Tuesdays because we get to see all these lines fresh right off the bat. And we love to jump right into the SEC. And we'll do that here with Alabama, Oklahoma. Alabama, of course, 8-1 on the season, playing Oklahoma 7-2, giving up 6 and 45.5 at Bryant Denny. By the way, our ABC lineup for the starting lineup this weekend, Notre Dame Pitt at 11 o'clock, Oklahoma, Alabama 2:30, Texas, Georgia for the late card. So while the first game's not particularly smelling particularly good,
it's an important game because that's probably the only barrier on Notre Dame's remaining schedule. And at Pitt, that I think that's a little bit of a sweat for them.
That is. They're 7-2, and the line is 11.5. So that's probably going to be the lowest line for the rest of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish betting line the rest of the year. Alabama, Oklahoma, let's go with you, Kai. Of course, you got a lot of people that are really interested in the Alabama Crimson Tide throughout the season. What are your thoughts on what they're doing? I believe 6-3 against the spread this year. So Alabama's covering some spreads. They're doing pretty well.
Speaking against the spread, I want to hear what Kai's has to say, how we did last week, Tony.
Yes, let's do it. Somebody had Alabama minus 9.5 or 10 on a little two-team thing going on. But how did we do on our lines? I know we did extremely well.
Thursday, 7-0. Friday, 8-0. Over the weekend, 26-6, so, you know, a little 81%, not too shabby throwing Thursday in there. Last week, 39-17, right under 70%. Month of October was a little bit below our norm, only 58% winners at 104-74. Year to date now, 966 and 558, 63%.
Coming up on that 1,000 mark. Yep, awesome.
We should be over that 1,000 mark by the end of this weekend. Oklahoma, Alabama. Bama giving up that 6 underneath 7. Of course, a lot of people would love that under that 7 total. And, of course, Alabama.
And Kai's been riding the tide all year.
I hammered him last night, -5. I've already got my max bet in. It was 5.5. I bought it to 5. I love it. I think it's going to go over 7 before game time. And I think Alabama wins by at least 10.
Okay.
So are we saying that? I mean, the 5.5 line is just, I don't know, it's just pitiful. I mean, are we saying Oklahoma is going to be playing the way they were the first month of the season? Alabama's run through the gauntlet they've run through coming off. I just think Alabama, and I love Alabama over their team total. I know Oklahoma's defense has gotten a lot better, but Alabama's team total is probably only going to be 26.5. So. Yeah.
Casey, the only thing that's kind of scaring me about this Crimson Tide, and I know we've had, and Kai, you played a lot of first half team totals over in Alabama's, and I know I've heard that a lot. I actually asked you that question last week about team totals. I know you didn't worry about this week, you backed off. But Alabama's offense ain't exactly lighting up right now. Are you a little stringent on this Crimson Tide offense? Their defense is playing fantastic, only giving up 9 points this past week. But then again, you're playing an Oklahoma squad that can put some points on themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. It's just going to feel like I'm repeating myself, but same story it's been for me for like a month and a half now. I mean, early in the season, I came in super high on Alabama. As you guys know, I think I bet them like all of their first 4 or 5 games through the Georgia game. And then, I mean, ever since then, I wouldn't say I'm low on them. I'm just right on market with what they came out with. I came out with like straight 6 on this game. It's straight 6. And yeah, you know, what does concern me, I do think they have a little bit of extra value because of how highly I think of Kalen DeBoer and just how I feel like Ty Simpson just makes the right play. I think there's some, you know, his steadiness, I feel like, is gives them a little bit of a hidden value and why maybe, you know, a guy like me that sees all the ways they've won these close games. I know I've tossed around the word lucky a lot. I still think they've been a little lucky, but when you have a quarterback like that, you tend to get the breaks in these. So I think there's some hidden value with Alabama for that. But to me, and I know this is something we've also disagreed on, but the most outstanding unit in this game to me, without a doubt, is Oklahoma's defense. I mean, they've been – I know they had a couple games where they gave us more points, but you look under the hood, like all their underlying metrics have just been so strong all year. So if there's one unit I absolutely trust that I feel like is going to put out a good effort game in, game out, it's Oklahoma. So I think you could make a case for the Sooners too. Ultimately, like I said, I landed right on 6, so I don't have anything here. But the market's been kind of interesting too. I've heard some sharp guys on the Sooners, actually, some people I network with. The only real money, I feel like, early in the week's been on Oklahoma. Again, don't necessarily agree with it. I don't even see any way I get anything on this game. I mean, it'd have to go over 7 for me to be interested in Oklahoma. We'd probably have to get to like 4.5 or something for me to bet Alabama. So just personally, I think it's kind of in the right spot.
Alabama 6-3.
It'll get over 7 here in Alabama because everybody, I mean, it's what happens every single week. Alabama fans bet on Alabama and against Auburn. Auburn fans have pretty much stopped betting on Auburn because, well, damn. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Alabama 6-3 against the spread. Oklahoma 5-3 against the spread. Oklahoma's actually given up less points per ball game than Alabama has. Alabama gave about 6.9 points per ball game. Oklahoma giving up just under 14 points per ball game. So, defensively speaking, statistically speaking, Oklahoma's defense looks better. Your thoughts, Kip, on what we're seeing here in this particular ball game? Could see a mud bath. Could be kind of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think this is a dangerous spot for Alabama because they have this, you know, that I was not very impressed with the LSU win. What did they have? 53 yards rushing. I mean, they can't run the ball. Their offensive line is a disaster right now. And you know, I think they've got the components because I think Grubb and Ty Simpson will understand. You don't necessarily have to hand the ball off to have a running game. You just got a lot of good athletes and playmakers. Just get the ball out quick on wide receiver kind of screens and just quick slants and things like that. So you can kind of move the ball methodically if you've got the right quarterback. And I think Simpson is. I do think it's interesting. I think it's underestimated that two of the top 4 teams in the country right now in terms of the polls, rankings, whatever you want to call them, nonsense, are piloted by Marcel Reed and Ty Simpson, respectively, who are sons of head coaches at the college football level. And I think that that presence of those guys who have been around the game since day one of their lives, and I think that's such a giant X factor of why these teams are having such phenomenal seasons. And I know there's other coaches' sons playing, and there's been ones documented in the past, but I think both these guys stand out in their decision making, and I think that's a big edge. But I do agree that Oklahoma is going to be problematic, and I base that on, I thought after they lost to Ole Miss and really couldn't damage Ole Miss's defense, which we saw was didn't stop Georgia a single time in an entire game, eight straight possessions. Georgia scored every single one. I thought that effort against Ole Miss, where the offense really didn't fire in that game. They got one good spurt and took a brief lead till Ole Miss righted themselves and won it. So I was pretty down on them going to Tennessee, but what they did 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago in Neyland really got my attention, because Tennessee had been just a runaway juggernaut offensively, and Oklahoma basically throttled that down. Tennessee made a couple crippling mistakes in that game, but that impressed me that they could go on the road in that environment and win that game. So I kind of think this game in the gotta have it category is all in Oklahoma's category, because if Oklahoma knows if they have any dreams of postseason play, they've got to have this game. This is an elimination game for them. Alabama's not in that position. Alabama could lose this game and they're still in fine shape for the playoffs. So maybe that's an intangible that doesn't enter players' minds, but I just think it's part of the psyche of this game. So I have to lean Oklahoma here and take the points.
We'll talk about Marcel Reed and the 19.5 they're giving out to the South Carolina Gamecocks, of course, who had gone to the playoffs. That's not going to happen. A little bit later on the show, 48.5 is the over-under. Texas, Georgia, we talked about it. We joke about it. Of course, we'll be going back and forth. Texas still hanging there with two losses. They're two losses to Ohio State. And also,
how good is that Florida loss looking right now?
That Florida loss does look good, but I mean, from week to week,
they got basically blown out. They made a little run at the end, but they, you know, that Florida dominated that game on the score.
I will say, to start from finish, we see games like that. I'm still trying to figure out how in the hell Syracuse beat Clemson. I know Clemson is not a good football team, but good God Almighty, to beat Clemson at home, Syracuse, that is lousy as a football team.
That looks like the worst loss of the year.
And listen, I mean, even to see Kentucky, we saw that line at three. We knew something was up. I mean, come on. It's Kentucky, for God's sakes, against Florida, a team perennially that beats them by 35 every single time they play each other in the backyard and knock each other out by 60. Even if Florida, just skill player-wise, play-by-players, are so much better than Kentucky. To see that game, they just blew it up.
Yeah, I've never seen a team not show up like that.
I think this may be one of our best games, though, the weekend, and certainly the late game, Texas, Georgia. Texas got everything to play for. They've got two losses. Georgia's sitting with one loss. They're only giving up six. There's that line again, six. A lot of people love to play that under seven line. Okay, so where's all the money going on these two huge juggernauts? So Texas loses, pretty much done.
They're done.
If Georgia loses, maybe an outside shot. I still think one of the best teams. Really interesting, too. Texas 3-1 against the spread their last four. Georgia 4-1 their last five against the spread. So both teams getting it done against the number.
Yeah, I'll take it the opposite way. You say a lot of people want to jump on the six. I think I even wrote this in my column this week. I don't think this game was one I was talking about. There's so many six or six and a half. There's so many games I'm like, man, if it just got to seven, this would be a play for me. There's a lot of dogs I would like if it was seven. I kind of mentioned that with Oklahoma too, if it got over seven. It's you know, kind of rinse and repeat for me for the Alabama Oklahoma game. I pretty much have this number right where it should be. So I just don't have any real push to get involved. I think we discussed it last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. My snap reaction was that it would be a little bit higher. Maybe Georgia would be on the other side of seven. But then, I went through my normal process, the making the numbers, and I came out at 6.5. So basically right where it is. Yeah, it's tough. Maybe in a thing that's only interesting to me for a while yesterday, and even now, the money line on this game and the Alabama game are about exactly the same. If you translate those money lines into a percentage, it's like a 62% chance that Georgia wins, like a 62% chance that Alabama wins. But we'll put them together and, you know, you're multiplying probabilities. That means there's a more likely chance than not one of these teams loses this weekend by the betting market. We've seen Texas take some money, just like we've seen Oklahoma take some money. Of course, none of this is absolute. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. But I think once we get closer to kickoff and just the more recreational money's coming in, there's going to be a lot of money on the favorite. Everyone's just going to expect Georgia and Alabama to roll. Whereas, you know, mathematically, statistically, it's more likely than not one of the two lose. So I kind of can't decide which one I think is more likely, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if one of the two falls. I think both Texas and Georgia, to me, have taken a lot of strides as the season has gone on. I know you can question Texas's schedule, but I do think it seems like they're now more on the right path, and certainly they were during that like horrendous month and a half to open the season. And I mean, frankly, Georgia's offense has been way better than I ever expected. I know like Mississippi State had like some glaring flaws in their rush defense, so that they were kind of ripe for the taking in that game. But just beyond that, I mean, ever since the second half of the Auburn game, I feel like this offense has been way better than I ever expected it to be. On the flip side, I think their defense has been worse. I have major concerns about the Georgia defense. I kind of feel like that's where this game's going to be decided. Texas's offense has been a huge letdown on the season as a whole. And to me, Georgia's defense has been just as big of as a letdown on.
But
on
they do stop. But they do stop the run. So Arch Manning's going to have to beat them. And I don't think Arch Manning is at that point. Do you?
I mean, I'm. Again, I have no play on the game. We'll see. I mean, I'm certainly a 6.5-point favorite. If you're just asking me who's going to win, I'm going to say Georgia, but I don't have the confidence to back it up with money at this moment.
First thing I thought, too, is at 48.5, because it seems like every time I look at a Texas game, it looks like it's 17-3 or 17-6 or something like that. Both teams are plus a 500 as far as an over there, under overs, 5-4 for Texas and 4-3 for Georgia in a particular game. So maybe the over is the player. I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that game plays out, certainly between the hedges. And I think Georgia is going to be all up for this game against Texas. But this is the game that, you know, a lot of people, this is big boy Texas football. This is big boy Georgia football. This is going to be a great thing to watch. And I do think that both teams are probably feeling each other out throughout the first half. Should be really, really interesting. Another really interesting game going on. I'm just kind of jumping around before we move on.
Tony, I just got to point one thing out, because I went back and looked it up real quick. I have to take a point of contention with Kip saying Oklahoma shut down a juggernaut in Tennessee. And this is one of the reasons why I love Alabama. Tennessee had 28 first downs. They threw for almost 400 yards. They only ran for 70, but they had three turnovers, including a horrible fumble by Aguilar, two horrible interceptions, a fourth down drop where hit the guy in the, I would say, hands that hit him right in the face mask, and missed it, and two missed field goals and still put up 27 points. Alabama is going to put up over 30 points against Oklahoma and beat them handily.
Okay. We'll see what happens. It should be interesting.
I just like disagreeing with Kip.
Well, yeah,
they didn't do it anymore, so somebody has to.
I will concede shut down was probably not the right terminology, but they went in there and beat Tennessee and Neyland and it really held them to about half the points they usually put up. So I was still impressed that they got that done when they had to have it, and they're in the same position this week. They've got to have this game as well. So, I'll rescind the shutdown. They survived in Neyland, but they still went in there and won a SEC road game, which always impresses me.
Tennessee's offense has moved the ball on everyone, so they're kind of an outlier to me. I actually, since I've given no bets so far, I did lay, I think, a 37.5 this week against New Mexico State, because it also seems like Heupel knows the spread. I think he's going to try to get some
That's going to be a bounce-back game. They want to, even though they're still considered the number one offense by yards per game, they want to go in there and they're going to want to put up 60. This weekend, and Heupel's trying to keep either Mecklinger or McIntyre for next year, or trying to keep both of them. So you're going to see the backup quarterbacks get some experience also, even though New Mexico State's defense is rated 50 spots higher than Tennessee's.
And don't you guys think with a bye week, we're going to see Mateer completely restored to what he was before the thumb injury now? I don't think people put enough emphasis on that either. If he's 100%, I mean, he was lighting it up at the first part of the season. Everybody was talking about him being the Heisman favorite. If Mateer's 100%, maybe the Oklahoma offense is going to be a little bit more imposing than we've seen in recent weeks.
He may have been the Heisman Trophy candidate there early in the season, just because no one else was stepping up and taking it by the neck. There was no quarterback that was lightning fast, lightning good to begin the season.
Mateer's taking it now.
We put so much behind bye weeks, and from an injury standpoint,
according to the national media, it's a two-man race between Mendoza and Julian Jassane, that's a shock that those two guys are 1-2.
There's no doubt. I mean, like that makes my argument. There's really no one out there grabbing it, and there's no one up there every single week going 5 touchdowns and 0 picks week in and week out playing some Southwestern screw. They're playing Boise State every single night where they get 5
touchdowns.
We just don't see it. And I mean, you see it in Indiana, but you're seeing it in the Big Ten.
And Mendoza might have clinched it with the late touchdown pass against Asim. Lost 6 games in a row and is tied for last place in the Big 12 or Big 10. But, of course, they have name value.
Not a good look for him this past weekend. Only winning by 3 against Penn State. I know they were only giving a 14 and a half. That was close.
I'm not impressed with Indiana's offensive line. I think if they play a real defense, they're in trouble.
Yeah, you will have a chance to disagree with Kip again before the end of the show, because Kip's top 12 is coming up here sometime before we're finished here. We're going to get his top 12, just best 12 teams.
Best 12 teams.
You had two different teams than the CFP picked last week. And the CFP, of course, will go out and get us later on tonight. So we'll let you know if, in fact, Kip.
Hold on. He just said when they play a real defense. Name the conference with 4 of the top five defenses in the country. The Big 12, Ohio State.
You're not going to tell me the Big 10, are you, Kai?
Iowa number 4, Indiana number 5.
Kai, there's 9 teams in the Big 10 that suck. That's not a you can't depend on statistics. You got to look at practicality. Yeah, that's bullshit. That's ridiculous. I'm so tired of this argument. People saying the number one ranked defense in the country, and they've played nothing but cupcakes. It's ridiculous.
I think the Big Ten's the number one football school in the country.
I congratulations with that completely inaccurate assessment.
Let's go around the horn real quick before we get your best 12. Give you time just in case you're finishing up. You may have changed your mind by looking at and hearing some of our little fodder back and forth. Ooh, I didn't even think about maybe putting Indiana in the game. Whatever. We'll go from your top 12 last week to your top 12 this week. We'll get into it here in just a second. Let's go to Case. Give me some early plays, something that's really popping out to you early in the week here on a Tuesday. We're on every Tuesday and Friday, third show coming up. What you got?
I know Kai's exaggerating just to get a rise out of Kip.
Of course. Working.
But I will say,
it always works.
In the last 10 years or so, I think this is as close as I've had the Big Ten and the SEC. I know Kip will hate to hear that, but I think it's really close. I think it's going to be fascinating in the postseason when some of these teams play each other. I know there's some really bad teams at the bottom, but I think there's way more. I think 9 is an exaggeration. So I can't wait for some of these teams to start playing each other. I really do think it's close. Let's see. Well, I got bets on both games tonight. Let's see how the markets moved. I laid it with Akron again. Akron, like my favorite team lately. They're always popping for me. I feel like they're super. They started the year so terribly. They had a lot of injuries. They're not eligible
for the UAB. Yeah.
I didn't even know that academic probation was even a thing anymore. But Akron this year proved to me it was. So I laid 5 with them. It's still under a touchdown. I think that's probably fine. I also took +2 with Western Michigan. They're now flipping to the favorite. Just try to get a pick 'em while you can. I like them at home tonight. Those are the two that jump out early week. I know Friday night we have what looked like it should have been a much bigger game with Clemson at Louisville. Louisville offense has been a pretty – and not even just the offense as a whole, just Miller Moss has been a big letdown. Just a guy that never really took the next step, kind of just stayed in the middle there. To lose to Cal last week, that was horrible. It just shows the ACC is just horrendous. I know I've been on this train all year talking about how bad the ACC. Although I will say I could strengthen Kip's coach's son argument. Because Virginia without Chandler Morris, who I think took a concussion in the first quarter, another coach's son who's been incredible this year. I'd kind of been a hater of Chandler Morris. I don't like him in his previous stops, but he'd been great this year.
When
he went out, the entire Virginia team collapsed around him. It looked like it was bad enough that there's no way he should play this week. But, I mean, we just saw it with Arch Manning, 2 weeks ago? He cleared the quote unquote concussion protocol that I don't think college football takes seriously. So I would be monitoring the Virginia situation. If Chandler Morris plays, I think I would take the big number with him against Duke. If he doesn't, I think it's justified. Louisville, sorry, I'm on a rant here, but man, there's been a discussion I've heard some people have this week, and it would be so great if it's just funny what game ends up mattering so much. I think it was week two or three, Louisville and James Madison played. James Madison was leading the whole time, ended up losing at the end. If James Madison wins that game, I think there's a really realistic chance the ACC gets shut out of the playoff this year, because people don't realize it's not the ACC gets an automatic bid. It's it's the five automatic conference winners, and I really think the AAC and James Madison could be ranked ahead of the ACC if they didn't just narrowly lose that game to Louisville. It was really close. I think the final might have been like 10, but James Madison was leading most of the time. So an interesting wrinkle there. I can't believe how bad all these ACC teams are. But to bring back to my original point, I took +3.5 with Clemson in this Louisville game. I think Clemson's shown some signs the last 2 weeks. Obviously, they ran away from Florida State right away, 17-0. I think Duke is pretty decent, even though they've completely no-showed a bunch of non-conference games, including UConn last week. Although, did you see UConn's quarterback? I was shocked. 26 touchdowns, no interceptions this year. No one's talking about him. I don't really think Clemson deserved to lose that game. I know Dabo went crazy, and I kind of agree. I don't think that was pass interference that gave Duke an extra goal line down. So we flipped a complete 180. I was never thought I'd bet on Clemson all year at the beginning of the year. Now I kind of like them in a midweek.
He's doing the same thing he did last season when everyone having a kid on campus. No one cares. No one cares about this football game, believe it or not. They should, but they don't, because they got nothing to play for. They got absolutely nothing. And Clemson's not used to that. And so no one gives a squat about going to see this game. And Dabo will get a victory this weekend. I take him +3.5 all day long, because he's going to come out of the woodwork. Everyone's kind of laying off him for the next couple of weeks, and he'll end up getting a victory by 10. You watch. I agree with you. Go ahead.
Those are the midweek ones. I'm trying to see if anything else jumped out. I mean, I know the big game day is at Pittsburgh. I know that you guys kind of already hinted that you might be on the Pittsburgh side. No, should be no shock to anyone. I am back on the Notre Dame train. I actually heard a little bit of rumblings about Horvath last week. I know I can't really take credit for it on the show, as I said I was passing, but I ended up laying it with Notre Dame last week. So I think I've bet them six straight weeks or something, make it seven. I think Mason Heinchel's a great story. I love what they've done. But man, you look at the defenses he's faced. I think it goes back to just me talking about how bad the ACC is. I just don't think he's faced any decent defense. And Notre Dame has their flaws for sure. They have some games where they don't show up. I know the secondary hasn't been great, but I just think it's going to be a lot different going against Notre Dame. And I don't know, did any of you see the viral clip from Narduzzi yesterday? Yeah. He was asked what's a must-win game, and he said, no, I'll lose this game any day. All that matters is the ACC. That was just baffling to me. Way too truthful. If you're not taking this Notre Dame team seriously, I'm super high on Notre Dame. Mainly, I want to be different. I'm picking them to win the national championship right now, and I'm going to keep betting them every opportunity I got. I laid 10.5. It's moved a little bit in their direction. I wouldn't go to two touchdowns, but I think there might be a little bit of room left still to bet them.
I agree with you too. I think those two losses. I think it's been that Boston College game a couple weeks ago was weird. It was somewhat of an anomaly when they won by 15, but they looked really good against the Navy. And again, starting the season 7-7-2, both teams 7-2 so far on the season. Couple other teams that are 7-2 are South Florida and that Navy squad. South Florida giving up 10.5. We'll have a play on that a little bit later on in the game. Kyle, let's go to some of the games you're looking at that perhaps are kind of jumping off the board. I know you're liking a lot of totals and things like that. It's early in the week to get onto that stuff, but what you like?
Case pointed it out. I'm loving UConn in this game, and their team total is probably going to be around 34.5. I haven't seen it yet. But just the way that their quarterback's playing, the way their offense is moving the ball, love it. Up and down the field, absolutely. Name the only two teams that have top 10 offense and defense ratings right now.
Was Indiana, and who was it, the other team that you had? Indiana and who else? I forget. I'm not sure.
Texas Tech. David Bailey leading the country in sacks. I mean, talk about some money well spent for Texas Tech. That defensive line, golly, I mean, but $7.5 million should get you a pretty good defensive line, right?
You would think, $30 million budget, that could help.
And I didn't put my two cents in on Georgia and Texas because I really don't have a two cents. I can't get a feel for that game. I think Georgia should win. I agree. I don't think Arch can win the game by himself. I really don't. But Georgia has started so slow, except for last week, and just been such a disappointment, especially at home this year, that I could see a 7-3 halftime score, which would just be brutal, you know, in my opinion. I don't know. A lot of games I love, tons and tons and tons of totals. And anything that I could possibly say to make Kip frustrated, I would like to add.
You can't do it now because I've already had my explosion. I am Mr. Milquetoast the rest of the show.
And, you know, you talked about
Ohio State would beat Georgia on a neutral field.
You talked about how disappointed you are in Georgia, and I get it. I mean, I'm looking at this team every single week, and it seems like at halftime they make some type of adjustments. And you know, I think
are you guys not paying attention to the entire season?
Kirby came out at halftime this last game. He goes, "I'm tired of making halftime adjustments." He goes, "I don't want to make halftime adjustments. This means I'm wrong in the first half." But if you look who they won in Mississippi State, Florida, Ole Miss, Auburn, Kentucky, they lost Alabama, Tennessee, they beat, and yeah. Austin Peay and Marshall, but at the same time, it's the defending champion, and they've lost one game.
First half at home.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. No, I agree with you. I said I cannot believe how bad this team looks, but they've lost one game, and they've lost to Alabama, who obviously
Okay, I got to give a counter argument here, and I'm a little biased because I grew up in Atlanta, and I've always followed Georgia, but I'm not like a Georgia homer. I'm not wearing a you know, it's a big G on my underwear. But before, please hold down the abuse from the peanut gallery. I guess you guys just don't see the progression of this team, because what's happening was, and Case hit on it perfectly. I was at the Auburn Georgia game. The first half, Georgia's offense completely inept, could do nothing, could gain no yards. Auburn was steamrolling them. They got the fortunate call at the goal line, which the SEC has released angles that showed that the ball was not under control when it crossed the plane, despite what Sean McDonough insisted, which I guess he's become the leading expert now on rules. I don't know why they pay a guy to be the referee when Sean McDonough already knows everything. Sean McDonough personally got SMU in the playoffs last year with his impassioned speech about what a gallant bunch of warriors they were to lose to the lousy Clemson team that they just fell to. So Sean McDonough's become the pivotal guy in the whole country. Yes. But I digress. Georgia, in that second half of the Auburn game, you could just see the light go on for this young offensive line that had been beat up, banged up, mixed and matched. They just blew Auburn off the ball in the second half and started running the ball. A lot of third and longs. They were converting those where earlier in the year they were punting it away. They took complete control in the second half, won the second half 17-0 against Auburn, and have been on a great trajectory since. The Ole Miss game, yeah. Lane Kiffin came out and shocked them and put up a bunch of points in the first half, but Georgia's offense matched them stride for stride. This half not showing up in the first half, BS. Georgia scored every possession, not only in that game, but in the first half as well, and came back and beat an Ole Miss team, which I believe is one of the best wins anybody's had all year. I don't think anybody can dispute right now, even if you're completely seduced by Indiana, Ohio State, which I am not, but between Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss, those are four of the best teams in the country. They're certainly teams in the top six or seven, and Georgia beat Ole Miss on a day where Lane Kiffin's team was just on fire, kind of rising up and stopping them right at the end. Georgia against Florida, people are saying, well, they were lucky to win that game. I think that's BS. Georgia-Florida is always a slobber knocker game, and Florida was coming off the emotional loss of their of losing Billy Napier, who was a popular guy. But I wasn't surprised Florida played well, but Georgia made the plays in that game to win the game, a game that's always challenging. And then I don't know how anybody can be thinking about Texas, and I'll wrap this up. 2 weeks ago, you've got sample sizes at Starkville. Texas trailed 38-21 against the Mississippi State team. We saw Georgia completely dismantle. Georgia could have won that game by 50 points if they'd kept the pedal on the metal in the second half. They scored two touchdowns right away to widen the lead. You have that petri dish of looking at two teams in the same stadium within 2 weeks of each other. Georgia looked like a 15 or 20 point better team than Texas. I reject Arch Manning is finally playing well and putting up statistics. Well, you know, he didn't win the Mississippi State game. Mississippi State lost the game when they punted to the most electrifying player on the field, Niblett, the punt returner, who had already taken two to the house that year and had beaten Kentucky basically with two long returns and set up their scores where they pulled that game out in Lexington. Arch Manning didn't lead anything. I still don't think he's ready for prime time. Georgia's defense has been spotty, but they have consistently stopped the run all year long. You've got to throw on the secondary to beat them, and the secondary is even improving. If anybody can't look at the overall trajectory of this Georgia team this year and see that they are taking huge strides and getting better and better every week, I just think it's ridiculous that we're still, you know, going back. And if not for my final point, if not for a bad Kirby Smart decision, if he kicks the field goal and ties the Alabama game in the fourth quarter, Georgia was out playing them. I don't think they lose that game.
I think it's funny. We can look at it from week to week, and certainly you sit there talking about, wow, that Florida game doesn't look like a squat now because what Kentucky just did to them. Well, they were only favored by seven that particular game. They were catching seven.
Well, they fell down at the goal line.
And they won by four. They won by four. Now we're sitting there saying, well, you know, that Georgia-Florida game is always a special game because it's the game of Jackson.
Well, Georgia would have won by 11.
I get that. We don't play games in petri dishes.
Hey, Tony, hold on.
You don't sit there and say, okay, well, this team
let me tell you what you would be saying. If Georgia punches it in there and covers, you're going, well, and Georgia covered again the Florida game, which is a big rivalry game. Hunter Stockton intentionally fell down.
Because all you guys
focus on is the spread. You don't look at the game in terms of the matchup and what's happening.
It's a handicapping show, and that's what we do.
Well, that's fine. And I can see that.
That's what we do on this show is we look at spreads.
Never mind. Don't listen to logic. Just look at point spreads.
With that being said, I can't wait to hear it. Give me your top 12 best teams in college football right now. Last week, you went A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Indiana, Texas Tech, BYU, Virginia, Miami, Notre Dame, Virginia, Miami, well, the two games that were different from the CFP.
When I went to press with that officially, that was the first time I released those on this show last Tuesday. Case convinced me in his argument that Oregon was a better pick than Virginia. So I had officially Oregon in my top 12. I made an adjustment after running the trial balloon on this show. So I only had one different, which is Miami.
I had Virginia written down, and I had them written down as you told me. I will put Oregon in there, and I don't think you want to be different. I thought you wanted to be different.
Go back and watch.
I just got an email from a listener that said y'all are arguing too much and you need to hush.
Well, he agreed. He agreed with me. I told him Oregon would be a 20-point favorite against Virginia on neutral.
And I made his facts,
and he said, okay, I went a little too far.
Watch the starting lineup. I've got Oregon in there, not Virginia, because that was the first time I had announced those.
I want you to be different than the CFP. I want you to have five teams.
Listen to me. I like your lineup better. Listen to me. I called this on myself last Tuesday. On this very show, I said, well, I'm guilty of what I always accuse the playoff committee of doing, of jostling teams around. I was going to put Miami in, and then I said, well, how can I put Miami in and not mention another team in the ACC that's right now in first place in the standings? So I put Virginia in, not thinking that they were really one of the best teams, but I was guilty of the same thing I criticized them for and conceded that on the show last week. So
yeah, give me your 12 right now.
There's no change. I've got the same 12. I've got BYU lower in my estimation, but I don't have them numbered. I've still got the same top five SEC teams, which of course are Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Oklahoma. And then I've got Oregon and, which is now kind of hanging by a thread. I was not very impressed with their gallant 3-point win at the buzzer against Iowa. I think I was a decent team, but not only decent. But of course, you've got Ohio State and Indiana. I've got Texas Tech. I still have BYU kind of clinging to the bottom for a spot there because I think that was not a bad loss. Texas Tech is just that good. And Texas Tech is a real threat to make a lot of noise throughout the playoffs. And I've still got Miami. They whacked Syracuse, but that didn't really change anything. But I think in the ACC, which is dreadful, and I still think overall from a team standpoint and a personnel standpoint, I think Miami is one of the 12 best teams in the country, even though they may have one of the 12 worst coaches in the country.
And you have Notre Dame, correct?
And Notre Dame, that's correct.
Okay, because you had mentioned Notre Dame. So your 12 are A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Oklahoma. Then you got Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, Texas Tech, BYU, because you did not have BYU last week. You had BYU out. You had BYU and Oregon, but you moved Oregon in. BYU is not in, but you got BYU in this week, Miami and Notre Dame. So you've got two teams that are different, correct?
That's my 12.
Okay, that's it. Okay.
And I'm going, and I've already gone to press with that because we're not doing a happy hour party night. So I've already cut that, and that is out there. And that is my best 12 this week.
I love it. I love it. Now give me some of your best plays there, Kip Kiefer, because I love it. I look at some of the things, and obviously, you're SEC, we're just
Georgia's won 35 out of 36 at home. I still contend if Kirby Smart kicks the field goal and ties the Alabama game, they've got a really good chance to win that game because they had it trending the right way. I still don't understand the 4th-and-1 play, which he continues to defend, that says the freshman guard had needed to move into the gap where the guy got through Overton and tripped up Cass Jones. That's fine and good, but still, in that situation, you've trailed the whole game. They don't kick the field goal. So Georgia could theoretically be 36 in a row at home coming into this game. They've won 35 out of 36 as Texas comes in. And I've said it all year. I just don't see this Texas team. I think the offensive line is a disaster. They can't run the ball at all. There's three or four top teams that really have no running game. And so that means Arch Manning's going to have to beat Georgia, and maybe he's going to rise up and have the game of his life and live up to the billing that everybody says. But you're going to have to show me that. And I think the argument that Texas has this elite defense has been shot full of holes, because I just saw the Mississippi State team that Georgia totally throttled. They gave up a couple what-the-hell touchdowns in the second half, but Georgia had raced to a 38-7 lead. They could have kept the pressure on. They could have beat them 56-7 or 56-14 had they wanted to. And the correlation between that and the Texas effort there, where they gave up 38 points and were trailing by 17 in the fourth quarter, I think just screams that Georgia is clearly the superior team to Texas. And I expect Georgia to win that game. I just have the feeling that Alabama's kind of riding for a fall a little bit. So I'm attracted by the 6 points that Oklahoma's getting here, because I think Oklahoma knows this is do or die. I think they have fancied themselves as a playoff team all year and carried themselves that way. But this is the end of the road if they can't get it done. And it's not a must win game for Alabama. Alabama's going to be in the playoffs anyway. So unless they have a disaster at Auburn, which I guess is theoretical now, I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback week to week change completely. Cause I was completely down on the quarterback Daniels that they had brought in. He was so bad and looked like a high school quarterback just taking off and running after any pressure whatsoever in Kentucky. For him to go out and throw for 370 yards last week, I mean, I've never seen a turnaround like that in just a week. So Auburn might be a little dangerous for Alabama now. So maybe it is more of an important game than I'm giving it the credence of, but I just got to like Oklahoma a little bit with the points. I don't know what to do with the Arkansas LSU game, a dysfunctional U against malfunction Junction. Brian Kelly has sued LSU today because they're holding out on his payoff. And I mean, can't make this up.
Piece of shit. You really can't.
So I don't know, in that game, you think LSU's got superior personnel in Arkansas on the road with no defense whatsoever, but I'm not sure LSU can score. I don't know what the number is today, but I'm thinking maybe Arkansas.
Five and a half.
Is that all it is? Well, then you got to take LSU. I thought, because they're just a better team. But I guess Michael Van Buren might be the starter. Have we seen the last of Nussmeier? I mean, what a sad saga that is. He was getting his ass chewed and he got pulled. And I'm not convinced he's been healthy all year either. There's just something just really wrong with that whole outfit. So I don't know. That's a couple. I'm also kind of intrigued. I'm staying in the SEC because I haven't really looked nationally, although you did mention Navy. Navy's still a pretty good team, and they always fold. Notre Dame always beats the hell out of them. But South Florida, this is kind of a must-win game for them. I'm kind of intrigued by that game. I'm kind of like thinking Navy's going to stick around here. So that's one that kind of caught my attention. I don't have a list in front of me. Who's Boston College playing? Because I think
they're off. I think they get the bye this week.
Thought I saw Boston.
You're right. Yeah, Georgia Tech.
Yeah. That's right. Of course, I just had a blank there. I think Tech's in that region too, where they got to win. But you know, they haven't been very impressive on the road. I think Tech might just gut that out. Boston College, not a good team, but pretty feisty at home. So I'm kind of leaning toward Boston College in that one, because Tech's got to have it. And they probably will pull it out, but I just don't like their road performances very much this year. The NC State game, of course, was a disaster. But remember, they had to miraculously win at Wake Forest too. So I just kind of like Boston College, the home team, getting the points there. And the only other one I'll mention, I don't know what the psyche of Missouri is going to be. I don't think the freshman quarterback is very good. Texas A&M, you know, beat them, but it seemed like they had one arm behind their back. I haven't been buying on Missouri all year, as they play their eighth home game of the season this week. How you can have 8 out of 12 games at home, I still am befuddled. And I know I've beat that horse to death, but I think it's ridiculous. But Mississippi State goes to a bowl game if they can win this game, and I think they're going to be a lot more engaged. So I'm kind of looking at what looked like a terrible team last week. The freshman quarterback that came in when Chavin got hurt, looks kind of electrifying. So with a week of practice with the first team, I'm going to call for the upset here and say the Mississippi State Bulldogs upset, discouraged Missouri.
And the line's only 7 on that game. So, and we, you know, the line was 7 for Missouri last week, and obviously they got blown out. A lot of people thought that was an interesting line too. Cincinnati giving up 6.5 to Arizona, I think, is really interesting. I'm kind of interested in watching that 5 game. You mentioned South Florida and Navy, both 7-2. The line's 10.5. Notre Dame and Pitt 7-2. That's the first game at 11.5. That game goes off at 11 o'clock. A&M giving it 19.5, I think, is interesting. The LSU Arkansas game just going to be plain ugly. I'm not going to watch that. UAB catching 18.5 against North Texas. I think North Texas got everything to play for. The Mean Green, I think they may wipe UAB off the face of the earth. Alex got on the phone with me this past week, so they had great practice. And I bought in. I was like, I don't even text you guys.
Appreciate your devotion, Tony.
For what it's worth, Alex has said they had one of the best practices they've ever had. And yeah, their defense only gave them 24 points. He did say in his presser that they are playing more up to their capability. So I'm not sure what that means. They lost by 7, but they lost to a really shitty Rice squad. So I'm not sure what that means. And again, they were on the road. So I don't know.
And who's the bigger homer, Case? Kip with Georgia or Tony with UAB?
Oh, dude, listen, I'm all about jumping off. I'm not for spending $14 on a Vulcan dog. I got news for you. I will not. If I get free tickets, I'm in, but I am not going to buy any concessions down there because it's a ripoff. It's a pain in the ass. I hate that. That's why I don't love Bartow, because UAB actually owns that building and you can get $1.50 hot dog. If you're going to go watch a shitty product, the least you can do is feed your damn family. That's all I'm saying. If I'm going to go watch a shitty game and I bring my 3 kids, the least I can do is get a $20 meal, not a $125 meal per day.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point.
Just want to bring that up. Oklahoma,
Alabama. Gambling questions.
Yeah, hold on a sec. Iowa USC, I think, is a really interesting game. Iowa obviously played really close this past week, and they always play ugly. I had the over 42 in that game. That thing was flying over. His first half, they had 19 points, and just laid a turd in the second half. It goes under again. Ole Miss, Florida, I think, is a really interesting game. Ole Miss giving up 15.5. Then Georgia, Texas, UCLA, Ohio State's 32.5, Missouri State, Mississippi State 7, and then that Wisconsin. I may just take that over Wisconsin first half just by a half point, just to see if they can get a half point. I tell you what, this, if they get over a half a point, it will be like in their first drive. It'll be when they figure it out, because Indiana will figure it out. It'll be like, I don't know, 35-3 at halftime, but at least I can go ahead and pad my coffers a little bit. 29.5 is the line on that particular game. Guy, you were saying.
Well, I got one Tony Curry useless fact, although I don't think it's useless. I'm going to throw in real quick. What is the only team in college football that has 9 wins and all 9 wins by 20 or more points?
That'd be Ohio State.
Nope.
Texas Tech?
No, there you go. Texas Tech.
They're scary. I'm telling you, they are scary, fellas.
I agree. I love them. But I want to move into something that has got me more and more and more, and I want Case and Kip to tell me why I'm either right or wrong. I don't know why, but the way they're playing at home, I love the Bruins tonight. Yes, that's right. We're going into the National Hockey League, baby. We're gonna get some puck action. Seeing the way that Toronto plays on the road, the way Boston plays at home, I like Boston a plus, especially getting plus there. You know, Carolina minus 65 at home. They've been rolling at home, and they get the Capitals tonight. Montreal only minus 20 at home against the Kings. Again, it's 6-1 away, 5-1 home, but I just think that's not bad there. I really like San Jose under their team total 2.5. Their offense has sucked so bad this year. A game that I'm going to watch, but I want to know why the line is so high for Colorado, 10-1 against Anaheim, 11-3. That's a crazy line that I need explanation with, Case.
Well, I tread lightly on all these because I'm wondering if I'm doing something wrong. If I got a bug in the a spreadsheet, I show value on almost all the favorites tonight. Unfortunately, including Toronto at Boston. Boston has been good. I got to lay it down for that. I just think their team's awful. I mean, if I'm ranking teams in terms of talent wise, they're like 28th or 29th in the league. I just feel like they're kind of running a heater, and it's going to run out at some point. Toronto's been bad though, so I laid minus 120 last night. It's come a little bit up since then. Speaking of riding a heater, and you got to give Anaheim some credit, but man, it's just like everything they throw at the net goes in right now.
It's unbelievable.
It's going to run out at some point. I had that one kind of fair, but I think right now. I know the last time we talked about the NHL, it might have been a little bit different. I said there were 6 or 7 teams that have separated themselves. I think there's a big one right now. I just think Colorado is way better than ever.
Didn't they lay 6 on Edmonton in the first period the other night?
Yeah, they won 9-2 finally.
You never see 6 goals in the first period. You never see that in the NHL.
Yeah, so granted, I thought Anaheim's run was going to run out in Vegas on Saturday, and they ended up winning in overtime. But I kind of feel like it's going to end again here tonight. We'll see. So again, no huge bets on the ice tonight, but really the only underdog that intrigued me at all, and now it's moved to where it's basically a pick'em, was Columbus at Seattle. Other than that, I basically either every other game was either a pass or I lean to the favorite. I agree with you. Washington's beat up right now too. Logan Thompson's just been unreal though for 2 straight years, so he could steal one. But I laid 155 with Carolina. So seemed like the two you were highest on. I'm against you with Boston. I laid it with Toronto, but I did lay some Carolina.
What do you think about that San Jose team total under?
I you might need to check your number. San Jose's offense has been amazing. They've been great. That being said, I this is another one where I'm looking to sell. So I don't mind it tonight at all. In fact, I don't play a lot of team totals, but off the top of my head, Minnesota's kind of getting it together. I think Gustafson should be starting because I think Jesper Wallstedt started their last game. I think their injury list is completely unclear, but I mean, San Jose is like, haven't they won 5 of 6 or something? I've been betting them constantly too.
Yeah, I think
I'm
a shark.
I gave them out. Macklin Celebrini, Will Smith, they have really great young offensive players. It's like defensively, they're kind of still a sieve, and goaltending Askarov's coming around. I'm not sure who's going to start tonight. Snap reaction as someone who doesn't bet team totals, I would agree with you, but long term, I think you want to be on more Sharks overs because they can score.
Kip, you got any takes on that, on hockey?
No, I focus primarily on the Western Conference because I follow the Golden Knights, and Case's Aiden Hill, have a fractured femur or something. Is he ever coming back?
Man, the hockey injuries, they are so secretive. They don't tell you anything. All they have to tell you is lower body or upper body. There was a report from a national guy that he'll be back around Christmas.
Great. Well, so. I don't know if they can weather the storm that long, because I am not impressed with their the young guy, Lindholm, I guess, is pretty good, but I don't know about this Schmid character.
Yeah, they played really well last night, actually. They lost 3-2 to Florida. Probably deserved to win, but Bobrovsky, Florida's goaltender, had been having a rough year, and he just had he turned back the clock last night. He looked like Vezina Sergei Bobrovsky again. I thought Vegas was the better team. So We'll see. They also have, you know, not to toe into these controversial waters, but if you followed Canada at all, there's a gigantic sexual assault trial for the under 17 hockey team. The headliner of it was Carter Hart, the former first round pick, I believe, Flyers goalie. He has been out of the NHL for 2 years. But of course, the team that steps up and signs him is the Vegas Golden Knights.
He's eligible
December 1st. So he's going to start getting some work. It's going to be it's going to be very controversial. There's going to be a lot of talk, but he's going to be in the mix here soon. So long term, I still think Vegas is going to be okay, but they're going through it right now for sure.
Case, I got to get your thoughts before we get to the top of the hour, because you are in Las Vegas, and I just love to get your thoughts on what's going on with the Cleveland Guardians and their two pitchers. I saw some more in-depth analysis investigation based on the actual pitches. I guess they got it down to the point where they know exactly which pitch they were throwing. It was in the mud. One was worth like $57,000. Another person made $38,000. I didn't even know you could put that kind of money on a pitch-by-pitch action. I know there's like a QB1 where you can actually tell each individual play as it's going. Yeah. I've never played that before, but I know you can do that. Now, of course, Vegas and everyone else is putting a $200 limit on Major League Baseball plays. What are people out in Vegas saying about what's going on with this? And why the hell is a guy who's making $4.5 million a year scrounging with scumbags in alleyways?
Yeah, sounds like this is one you might know better than me. It's just it's insane. I haven't followed this one as closely. It wasn't as captivating as like the movie poker thing. But
jeez, man.
I do know they said, I think I saw yesterday one of the Class A pitches he only made $5,000 off of.
That's insane.
How much
that's tip money for that dude? He's making some ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah. So he threw his life away. He's probably going to jail or whatever for $5,000. Case, which is crazy. I did see, I think it said they made $450,000 combined, they're accused of. So obviously there are other cases where he made more.
Well, where can you bet this kind of stuff?
I mean, it's interesting because I know a lot of people do this, so I'm not calling out Tony, but Tony said Vegas, and really Vegas, you can't really bet any of this in Vegas. Vegas, the gaming control board here is still really, really strict. It's hard to even get a sports betting license. But the big major sports books, DraftKings and FanDuel, neither of which are licensed in Nevada, you could do this. So the really big national books that had the micro betting where you could go play by play. They had it available. The crazy thing, just like the NBA one, though, is that you're able to get down this much money. I think that's the talk in Vegas on one of these. It's just a thing. It kind of shows what a farce legalized betting has become. If you show any ability, if you have just the smallest pulse or can beat the line at all, you're immediately getting limited. You can bet like $20 on these props. But if you have a whale and you're losing a ton of money and you show problem, they're all about problem gambling, which is complete BS. As soon as you show signs you're a problem gambler, you got a VIP host sending you tickets. They're letting you bet tens of thousands of dollars on whatever the hell you want. All it takes is someone with a little bit of a drive, I guess, to flip one of these accounts and say, hey, I got a sure thing. Why don't we put down $20,000 on this pitch? I guarantee you it's winning. So it really just shows a lot of the flaws.
And I think in a bigger, broader way, too, I think it cleans up the business. And what I mean by that is, you know, I analogize it like the housing market. In a long time, all of a sudden, there was all these mortgage companies. When the housing market got really hot, that were coming out of the woodwork, and there were like three mortgage companies, and all of a sudden there were 3,000 mortgage companies, and the mortgage companies that were smaller had to give you different opportunities to make more money on your house. In other words, they were like, hey, listen, instead of putting 20% down, we're going to give you 20% if you'll take this mortgage. And what happened? It blew up in their face. Next thing you know, we got back to the three originals and it started all over again. All these books, I mean, ESPN is the worst at it. They're sitting there saying, hey, listen, this is paid plus 675. Today, we're going to pop it to plus 875 if you jump on this. But they're actually pulling bets. They're handing you cards and placing bets in your hand saying, listen, if you bet this, we're going to give you not plus 675. We're going to give you plus 975 if you bet this now, which, you know, gosh, if you're dumb enough to do that, so be it. It just scares the shit out of me because I know a lot of people don't know what they're doing. And a lot of people are getting involved in this kind of thing. And for Major League Baseball players to do that for $5,000 to me is just all I can think of is this guy's probably got his wife's brother probably is a gambler and they probably are drinkers. And they're probably having a good time. And she's like, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, I could throw a pitch and make you $5,000 right now. And maybe he owes him $5,000 aside. He's a tight ass and just decided to do it just for a break. But I even then it would be really, really stupid. So yeah, give me the Vegas guys. I'll go Vegas all day long. This other crap you go for the who eats. It's just amazing. Really is. Real quick, NFL games: Bucks, Bills, Cincinnati Steelers, Seahawks, Rams. A pair of 7-2 teams. We got the Chiefs and the Broncos, which is good. The Lions and Eagles. Anything jumping out to you guys early? We're going to let you fly. We'll jump back into the NFL a little bit more, and then we get into some NBA and stuff coming up on Friday, 10 o'clock Central Time. But any particular games really jump out to you guys, particularly in that turd we saw last night on Monday Night Football?
College basketball tonight, more important, top 25 matchups. Kentucky's $22 million roster at Louisville, catching 4.5.
Nice. I like that. I like that Kentucky played tonight. And if you ever lived in Louisville, Kentucky, you realize that 95% of Louisville is Kentucky, not Louisville. They don't care about Louisville basketball there. Anything else going on, guys?
Matchups, but a lot of good games tonight.
And who about what about this kid that set a record this past week? The tallest.
7'9",
tallest teenager in history, 7'9". That guy is a freak. He could just put his hands up and drop the ball in the basket. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And I think he's averaging like 3 points a game or something like that. He's uncoordinated as hell, but boy, he's a tall son of a bitch. I'll tell you that.
You would be too if you were 7'9". Well, I mean, you are anyway at 6'3".
He looks like something out of The Quiet Place. I mean, he really does. He's like this long
thing. How do you even manage your life if you're 7'9"? Your life expectancy's got to be like nothing because you're going to bash your head in about 400 times a week.
I got five words for you. David Berry, big and tall. All right, let's see what happens next week, guys. Thank you so much for everything you do. We appreciate you. We love you. We'll do it again on Friday, a third show coming on the way. Thanks to Duncan Dan for wanting the show here. And again, our thoughts and prayers and everything in the world about this wonderful country we live in. We think
Happy
about our
Veterans Day,
Veterans
everybody.
Day.
And thank Veterans you Day. So much for everything. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you for everything you do. And we thank you for everyone in our armed forces. We know we have some armed forces folks that are actually in this group, including Kai's son. We greatly appreciate everyone giving their
absolute
sacrifices to this wonderful country of ours and doing everything they can to keep it free and keep it the way it is. So we greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, I got to go double up on my blood pressure medicine. I'll see you guys Friday.
Go get him, Tiger. We'll talk to you a little bit. See you guys.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.